calling all lovers of totes and goodies. Black Nerds Create has launched our Fill Your Tote giveaway campaign as we gear up for our 9th birthday. Enter into our giveaway when you buy a Black Nerds Create Magic tote bag at our merch store on DFTBA. You'll get a chance to win books, arts, and other cool stuff. Entering is simple. All you have to do is buy your very own tote. You can find the link in our show notes. And forward your receipt to weblackandnerds@gmail.com. The last day to enter is May 15th, and the giveaway is open to U.S. residents only. Once you get your tote, don't forget to tag us at Black Nerds Create on socials and show us how you fill your tote.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Here on Wizard Team, it's no surprise that we love books. We also love supporting the independent bookstores.
With our bookshop affiliate link, you can not only get all the books on your TBR, but you can support indie bookstores and BNC at the same time.
And if you're not sure what you want, that ain't no problem. Check out our The Plot Thickens list full of recommendations from none other than Portia herself.
Head to www.bookshop.org/shop/blacknerdscreate to treat your shelves.
Treat your shelves.
Oh, that's nice. That's clever.
Oh my goodness.
That's clever.
So Dira is like, no, I have to, you know, you're potentially going to put like, I can't put my king in like Wakanda, my Wakanda in danger. Iyawa is like, you can't escape me. You have to sleep eventually. That was just freaking, it is so creepy. It's crazy. She's like, look.
You're not going anywhere. Look. Like, you're, even if you fight your sleep, you're going to fall asleep sometime and I'm going to be right there. Ready.
And I'll be there.
Lurking in your brain.
Mm-hmm. That's wild.
I'm like, what kind of... Like, it really sounds like Ayala has nothing better to do with her day because their only hope is to break through Dira and her, like, Wakanda. So it's like, she has nothing better than to do but to sit and monitor when homegirl's asleep. And then she'll be there. Like, she doesn't have to even set up an alert system. She's just there. She has nowhere else to go. She lives in Dara's head, rent-free, literally.
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 And Dara can do nothing about it. Yikes.
That it sounds like an anonymous letter that you get slipped with like the newspaper and magazine clippings through under a door. Mm-hmm.
Like, I know what you did.
The threat level is so bad.
You have to sleep eventually. She's like, I'm going to just sit right here and wait till you go to sleep. Yikes. So Dira bolts awake and she immediately goes to find Okoye, which I love that she's like, let me find the adults. This is not something that I can deal with on my own. So at first Okoye is kind of like, because it's the middle of the night. She's like, can this wait? And Dira's like, nope, this is extremely dangerous. And I don't know if I'm a danger to Wakanda. I don't know what is going on here. So Okoye is like, all right.
She even has a suicidal like warning, but like she has like suicidal like ideation about like how to save Wakanda from her being a problem before she even goes to Okoye. She's like, well, if I don't find help for this, then this is my other way out. And it's like a
she's also saying that like though, but she was saying because Iyawa was saying like, you know, I have access to your genes, so I can like pass stuff on.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know what I mean, like I
like to infect other people.
And so yeah. Mm-hmm. And so Dira is also wondering, she's like, if I were to die, does that like I don't know if that'll actually
take it, yeah, if it'll help
anything,
yeah,
or like help. So yeah, so she brings or Okoye brings in this advanced researcher, her name is Zira, and she can feel the truth through touch. So after Deera kind of like debriefs them, explains to them what happened. They send her back into her dreams so that she can kind of get more info from Iyawa and figure out like what's going on. They do like, instead of, excuse me, they like take her into, I think it's the lab or like the hospital. They like, you know, are monitoring her vitals and stuff. So Deera goes back into her dreams. Iyawa explains how she programmed a virus into her genes, which, you know, I don't think Kishana's here, but when she does listen to this, I'm sure this is not possible, but I do want to know. Still have questions. How do you program a virus? I know that like Marvel, though, especially, and like just sci-fi in general, they like, you know, there's a merging of like tech and genetics and stuff. And I know that in real life, there is some of that, but.
Weren't they doing?
In my head, I'm like.
Yeah, this may not even be related. And I know Dr. Kishana will put me in my place for speaking out of turn here. But like, didn't they have for a while where they were like actively messing around with like genetic code for like children, like in utero, like they were like changing like gender or sex in utero. Like I remember reading about that a while back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how true that was, but I remember it being like part of like discourse for a second about like, mm-hmm. That's what something that geneticists were working on.
Right.
And I'm like, is that the level of like interaction that would have to happen for you to like one, yeah, if it is possible, is that the level of interaction to put a virus into something? Like you have to like mess around with like the actual genetic code, or is it more like, in my mind, like sending an email and adding a little attachment to it? Like you're just like attaching.
Right. Because when you tell me you programmed a virus into my genes, I'm thinking you're sitting at a computer. Like type, like, you know, the like classic hacker, like in a movie thing where they're just like typing on the keyboard and that's it. That's like that's the visual in my head. I know that that's not what they're saying, but I mean, she was able to like disable that one gene. So clearly, like, it feels plausible in this world.
And she didn't show any like medical, like, devices were being used when she did it. She just like, I'm gonna but talk
she's
to
like
you
in her brain.
And now you
she's in her brain, yeah. So there's like, I don't know, it's levels to it. I know that this is not like, I know that we're reading sci-fi fantasy, like I'm aware. I just also am like, what does that mean, you know? So yeah, but also, and also because like, you know what you're talking about, and like I feel like a lot of it is around babies and like, you know, people who are not yet alive and born and whose genetics or DNA or whatever aren't fully solidified. But like, if I'm a grown person, like I've been out of, you know, I've been out in the world for 14 years and you can like change my genes, I just, I have questions.
Right. And your DNA,
and the
has
answer
been
could
DNA.
Be this is sci-fi, Bayana, like relax. But I'm also just, I just want to know.
That's what I kind of kept making peace with when I was reading it. I was like, I'm gonna just leave this alone because we're not seeing the process and there's a reason.
Right.
And I'm gonna just leave it alone. Like, I'm gonna leave it alone. Right. I love that. Like, Adam is with us and like, oh, yeah, like when they're children, like the modifications that can be made, like that, like a case that he's talking about. But like, he's like, Adam is talking about, sorry, gender. But Adam is talking about like, specifically how like the ethics of it and like the law mm-hmm. around it, and I'm like, that's a whole other thing there too, because like, what does Wakanda even have in regards to like genetic practice and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. And
but also like, we're dealing with somebody from a different Wakanda, so
right,
they clearly they couldn't even get the raw vibranium together, so I'm just like,
that's what's funny to me, to be honest. It's like, you're the only person in your world who can do this. That's us, that you're telling. Like, you're saying that to me. I don't know if I believe you about that. Secondly, mm-hmm. you're telling me that your world is falling apart. This is the last urgent way to do something about it. But your world is so behind that you can't save your own people. But it's so forward that you can change my genetic code and I'm in a whole different universe. Like, it's
right.
It's
but
doing
I wonder.
A little bit
but I think. Too much. I think for me, I'm wondering, because she did, again, like, she did say that like, she's the only one who can, like, jump into minds like this. So I'm wondering if she, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's, like, the vibranium. I don't know if it's, like, a mutation, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if she has some other thing going on and that it's not like Wakandan or her Wakandan technology and more just like something that's innate with her. There's just so many questions. But again, because it's a short story, like, it's fine that it's not answered, but it's just interesting because it's like, if it was expanded, these are all questions I would have, and I would want like the intricacies of like how it works and how, you know, how it all comes together. And of course, like, you know, we're spending an entire podcast episode on it, so we're dissecting more than I think you would if you're just reading it regularly.
Of course.
But that's the point. Like, you know. Yeah. Well, Adam says, surprise, she's a mutant and it's a secret X-Men crossover. I mean, that's one thing about this.
We're about to get to anthology.
Yeah, we're about to get to something. It's not quite that, but you're on the track. But also, like, that's the one cool thing about, or not the one, a cool thing about the anthology is that it doesn't, like, it does acknowledge the rest of, like, the Marvel universes, since you're dealing with multiverse right now. But, like, it doesn't just, like, have it all happening in a vacuum. It does kind of acknowledge more going on. So then Deira starts asking like too many questions. She's kind of like, okay, how would, you know, what does this mean? Like, how would you help the king? Like, you know, just all these questions to the point that Iyawa was like, you told somebody, didn't you? And Deira's like, what? No, like, of course not. Who's going to believe me? And Iyawa was like, nah, see, okay. So now I have to...
It is so funny, again, because, like, Deira is a trainee, this is, like, what, maybe, like, second or third week in this training, and clearly, Iyawa, who appears to be the same age, is way further advanced in detecting, like, stealth and, like, just, like, stuff that makes her sound like she's, like, a super spy, honestly. Like, she's got, like, a lot of training in how to be, vague enough but effective enough at like getting what, like reading the person and getting what she needs and all that kind of stuff, that like nothing, because like in the description of Deira responding, nothing kind of like sounds like she's being completely obvious, but Iyawa just reads her like a book anyway. Like, it's just like, no, I don't trust anything.
Like, why are you asking so many questions?
Yeah.
Especially because
you weren't asking,
like,
questions before, but now you're asking a lot of questions.
Now you have all these questions, and it's like, I feel like if you hadn't been talking to someone, you would have come back here either like, no, I'm not doing it, or like, sure. You know what I mean? Like, without all of the extra stuff. So Iyawa attacks Deira and is trying to like merge or fuse into her like dream body, basically. They do have kind of like a little tussle, but Iyawa comes out on top. And so she wakes, essentially in doing that, she takes over Deira's body. She wakes up to Okoye and Zira and pretends to be Deira. And so, yeah, so like they have her kind of like, she isn't able to move because they have some kind of like blocker on her, just in case. And it's really funny because she's trying to like pretend to be Deira, but she immediately exposes herself because she sees Zira and she's like, you're a mutant. But that's not something that Zira mentioned to Deira at all. It's not something that like was common knowledge,
or that
but I guess she knows
up, or like what had even
right
like, been, like, oh, if Deira would have picked it up, if she were going to be a person who could pick it up, she would have picked it up when she first met Zira. And at this point it's like no,
but Iyawa knows a Zira in her
universe
that is a mutant. So yeah, so then Zira immediately goes into I guess it's still Deira's mind, but like to communicate with Deira to make sure that like she's still there and she's okay. As they're like, the jig is up, Iyawa. Like, we know that this is not you. So at that point, Iyawa kind of just realizes she failed, right? Because again, she is the only one who can do this. And then she also kind of reveals that it was a one-way trip. It's not like she can go back from that. So she, and she also admits that the virus was a bluff. So then we find out she didn't even do the virus, but she did do the other genes. So like, it's possible she could have, you know what I mean? It was a good threat. And she gives Dira her body back. So Iyawa is no longer a threat, right? So like, I like how this ends in the sense that like, Iyawa's no longer a threat. She's still like locked within Dira because again, this is a one-way trip. And she's just like kind of last ditch effort to save Wakanda or save her Wakanda. And they're all kind of like, you know, relieved. They're like, cool, we handled it. But at the same time, all three of them are like feeling bad for Iyawa and kind of wondering if there is something they can do to help. And obviously, like, it's not something that any of them can decide, but they all decide that they'll at least take it to the king and the council to, like, discuss. And so I really like the way that it ends in the sense that, like, it doesn't just, like, villainize Iyawa in this other Wakanda. And I felt like a twist to me on, like, you know, things that we see in general of just, like, Wakanda's closed off and they're not helping folks of, like, within diaspora, or you know, they are kind of letting all of these atrocities happen while they stay hidden. But in this case, something is brought to them in a completely different universe and they're like, oh, maybe there is something we can do to help. And just like having that problem or question be asked in a multiversal sense, I think is really cool.
It's weird to me because it's like, what, how would you even get in contact with that Wakanda? Why am I losing words? Mm-hmm. How would they even get in contact with that Wakanda, given that Iyawa is now like stuck on this side? Like maybe like,
well, they,
maybe Iyawa has like the coordinates or something, but like, you know,
yeah.
Like,
how do but you... they did mention that like they were already like their Wakanda or this Wakanda has research. Like, they've been doing research around the multiverse. So, yeah, maybe, like, it seems like Iyawa's still there. So, I'm sure she could still help in terms of, like, giving them more information or giving them, like, oh, we're, I don't know.
The coordinates. Universe. Like, we're on the
yeah, 30, whatever universe they're in. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just, I think that because Wakanda is so advanced and they're already doing that research, like, it'll probably take a while. I don't know how quickly it'll be able to happen. But at least, like, it's something that they could be working on.
It's just funny because it's like the way that they were so reluctant to pull more people into this issue. And yet they're like, mm-hmm. Oh, we could possibly resolve this by talking. Like, it feels like a wasted effort. Like, it feels like it's not going to move forward in a way. Sometimes, like, a little
I mean,
to me,
so
like,
to me, it sound it like feels
it's like a big... a thing that they like on top of their things they would like to do, you know what I mean? Like, they're like have yeah. So many other things they're concerned about.
I mean, to me, I think that it's open-ended and I kind of like that. Again, like if it was a longer story or like a novel or something, I think it would be interesting if the king and them were like nah, and then they have to, you know, go off and do their own thing, or if they said yes and then they're trying to figure it out. Like, either way, I think whatever the answer is interesting, and then what would happen from there is like a question too. So yeah, it's just like I don't know, I liked the way that it ended just because it was like, okay, yeah, like other Wakandans are also your people, but then also like, what does that mean? Like, how do you do that? How do you whatever? I think that's just like another story that I would like to read and like, you know, just expand on this, because this is very interesting.
So it sounds like for you, you don't mind stories that like, if they're a short story especially, you don't mind if they leave you with questions, because it makes you feel like it's like a good way to like interact with the world if they do give you more. But do you have an issue with that? Like, if you're reading like a standalone, would you have an issue if there's too many questions that are unanswered? Or do you still like those kind of
stories?
I think
it depends. I think it would depend. I think it depends on the story. I think it depends on the author. I think it depends on like how they like craft it. Cause I think that like there are stories, if there's a story that's like, it's just open-ended and like there's no resolution, I think that like, I think there still needs to be a resolution. And I feel like this story does, right? They get Iyawa out of there. they know what's going on. Like, they have a game plan to move forward, as opposed to like some giant mystery that's never resolved, or like, you know what I mean? So I think it really depends on what it is that's being left open. But I also just like am someone, which I feel like we've talked about on this podcast, I have not yet been able to write a short story because all of my ideas immediately balloon out into like bigger things. And so I found myself doing that with this one, reading it the second time around, as those questions come up, being like, oh wow, yeah, like this could just be expanded into this and this can do this. But reading it the first time, I'm like, oh yeah, this is cool. Like, it felt contained. It felt like its own thing. So yeah, I feel like as long as the story feels contained and like there is a clear resolution, if there are things that are not, that are still open-ended, or it's just like, you know, looking into the future, these are, you know, possibilities, leaving possibilities open as opposed to like just straight up questions or unresolved plot lines and stuff. Yeah.
Cool. It sounds like Adam's on the same page of like, it depends on which questions are left dangling. So that's true to me. Like, I don't know. I don't mind some stories being kind of like vague in resolution. I'm trying to think of like what's the like dividing point for me. I think it depends on how much trouble I had with your plot buildup throughout the story. Mm-hmm. Like, if I felt like there were too many questions that were left dangling along the way, and then I get to the end and none of those like bigger threads are like clipped, and then I get to the end and it's just like it's all kind of like in the air, I'm like, then why did we write this?
Why is this a story? So like, that's what I mean. Like, it really depends on like how it's crafted. But like, I don't think that it's inherently bad to have things be open. It's just like, how did you get there? And was it on purpose is also important too. Like, I think sometimes you can tell like when things are happening for a reason, and whether I, even for stories where I don't particularly like it, and even if it's not open-ended, just in general, I can, like, if there are stories or plots that I don't particularly love, but I can tell that it was written intentionally, I think I give it a little more grace than one that, like, just kind of stumbles into being a mess, you know?
Mm-hmm. Or there's just, like,
because it's like, okay, you're trying to do something here, and yeah, whether it, like, if it doesn't resonate with me, it doesn't resonate with me, but that's a me problem and not, like, a story problem. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think whenever you can pick up plot hole versus, like, a decision that was made about the plot, like, those are the things that I'm like, if I feel like it feels more, if it leans more plot hole than like a decision, then I'm probably not gonna like it as much, because I feel like that's kind of like you had time to like look over your story and fill in the holes,
right? Or like figure that out. So it's cool. Yeah, and Adam says it reminds me a lot of older sci-fi, like Philip K. Dick stories, where they drop you in what feels like a living world and would focus on a bit, leaving all the rest nebulous. Yeah. And I feel like with this, like, because a lot of us come in with like knowledge of Wakanda and like the Marvel universe, it's easier to do that, because it like already assumes that you know certain things. So, like, there are certain things that they explain, but not everything. And there's some stuff they just, like this story just says, you're a mutant. It expects that you know what a mutant is. At least on, like, a surface level. Yeah. So, yeah. So, yeah, this was my story for this anthology. I mean, kind of mentioned pretty much why, like, the Dora Milaje. I feel like it's cool to get more stories about them. There are a couple others in the book that are cool. Using lucid dreaming as like a multiversal like thing, I think is tight. Like, I love anything to have to do with multiverse, time travel, any of that. Like, let's go.
I was disappointed by like Multiverse of Madness not taking more advantage of the whole dream walking situation. I was like, this could be a lituation.
I haven't seen Multiverse of Madness. I've only seen it the one time. Mm-hmm. I need to see it again, but I will never forget going to I went to see it in the middle of the day by myself. It was 3D was the only one that they had available at the time that I could go. And I remember going into the theater and I was giving them my ticket, And homegirl was like, you know, this is in 3D, right? And I was like, yeah, whatever, it's fine.
Wait, was it one of those 3D? Is it one of those 3D theaters where it's like, it's just 3D? Or is it one of those 3D theaters where they have like, the shaking chair? I think I had to wear the
glasses
thing.
No, it wasn't the shaking. Okay. It wasn't that. It was just the glasses. And I was just like, yeah, whatever, it's fine. And then there were a couple moments where I was like, oh, that was a warning that I did not heed.
For those who are not aware about Vaiana's horror aversion,
it's easier for me in books to do horror, mm-hmm. but movies is like really, it's a difficult one. I do not enjoy it. So yeah, but I saw that in 3D.
Yeah.
That was unfortunate.
You loved Wanda, like,
As soon as that happened, as soon as she started reaching out, I said, oh, I've made a mistake. Because before, up till then, it was like, you know, it was like a regular Marvel movie. It was fine. Whatever. Cool. Like, there was some creepy-ish stuff. It was like, it's fine. As soon as she started reaching her hand out, I said, yikes. So, I will say it again.
Are we gonna get more? Is this all the horror we're getting? Like, we kept, as the story went on,
definitely
like,
I was like, this is crazy. And the thing is like, I knew it. Like, they did say, oh, there's horror elements or whatever, but like, I've seen movies that had horror elements that weren't actually scary, but they definitely had mm-hmm. the, like, you know, because there's different elements, one, and there are different ways to like frame something to make it seem like horror or, you know, scary or whatever. So, but they meant, I was like, oh, y'all meant horror, like for real, like not just the, okay, cool,
dark themes. It's not dark themes.
Yeah, not just dark themes. Horror. But again, yeah. I saw it in the middle of the day, so I was not like, it didn't bother me past, once I left I was fine, but I was definitely like, oh, in the moment, like, oh dang. And I was really glad that I didn't bring my sister with me, because we were gonna go together, and she would have been horrified. So,
poor horror babies.
Yeah. So I think that's it. Like, we've gotten through this. Thanks y'all for listening. We will be back next week, discussing Portia's pick, Bon Temps. That'll be fun. I like that one. I feel like we read it's that. I think we talked about it last episode. Yeah, it's in New Orleans. As soon as they said you're going to Mardi Gras, I was like, oh, this is about to be Portia's jam. So that'll be fun. Join us for our live recordings. We generally do them on Sundays at 1 p.m., but next Sunday is Mother's Day. So just stay tuned for the updated time and date for next week's on our socials. Or you can just wait till the episode drops on Wednesdays as we do.
Yes, Wizard Team Wednesday is a constant. You can always count on us for that. You can also count on Wizard Team being part of the Black Nerds Create Collective. If you want to keep up with our content, you can check out our website at blacknerdscreate.com and follow us on Instagram and Tumblr at Wizard Team Pod and at Black Nerds Create.
Awesome.
Thank you for joining
Bye,
us.
Y'all. Thanks, y'all.
Bye.